Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kate Murray, Ali Moreno and Craig Burley here with you in the studio. And what a brilliant semi-final first leg tie we witnessed between Manchester City and Real Madrid. We'll be getting into that during the show. We'll also be looking ahead to tomorrow's game between Liverpool and Villarreal. But what a game this was. 4-3 it finished. Madrid stunned by two early City goals from De Bruyne and Jesus. Benzema broke back in the first half. Then in the second half, Phil Foden restored City's two-goal advantage. Minutes later, Vinny Jr. went up the other end to reduce the deficit. City struck again with a superb Bernardo Silva strike and then conceded a penalty, which Benzema put away Panenka style. And the good news is we get to witness these two sides facing off all over again in the second leg next week as we now welcome in Stuart Robson and Nadim Anua as well. Craig, I want to start with you. What an entertaining game that was.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't look as if it was going to be entertaining after 10 minutes for Real Madrid. If you looked at Ancelotti's face, he was a worried man. But, you know, you can't write this team off. But I presume they're playing the theme tune from The Great Escape in the Real Madrid dressing room, because in some sense that's what it was. But, City deserved what they got, which was a win. But I wouldn't say... I think when I said deserve, they should have scored more goals, but you get what you deserve. They didn't kill Real Madrid off. It could have been 5 or 6. They made mistakes defensively, which makes it an intriguing game. But two players that have carried Real Madrid, we've seen La Liga obviously a lot this season on this network. Two players have carried them through some of the mediocrity this year, and there has been quite a lot of that in La Liga. And then moments of brilliance popped up again tonight. Benzema, best striker on the planet at the moment, bar none, and Vinicius Junior.
And Nadia, it was a great game. Maybe it's sometimes not for the City fans, even though they did come away from this one with the win. Should it have been dead and buried, though?
I think when you think about the way Real Madrid have been this season, is it ever really dead and buried? I believe what Craig's saying there, that, you know, they could have been more goals for City. But you take whatever, you know, comes from the game. To be able to score 4 goals in a semi-final is still a thing. But I agree with what he's saying about the mistakes at the back, though, because just offered encouragement. Every time it seemed like City were going to be out of the way, before you know it, there's a little mistake. Benzema was incredible. But to talk about Vinicius Jr., I thought for the first 50 minutes he forgot he wasn't playing against a recognised right back. And then next thing, he forgot that Fernandinho's old enough to be his father, but he doesn't need to treat him like his son. You know, it was really, really strange. But it was a great game of football. City, they'll take the win. I think the fans will take the win as well. And I think if you look at the fact that this is how Real Madrid play away from home, the expectation is that when they go and play at the Bernabeu, there's going to be a better chance for City again to be trying to open them up, because I imagine Real Madrid would be more front foot, given the fact they need to win the game now to get through.
Stuart, we knew coming into this game that City were going to have problems in defence with injuries, suspensions. But coming into this game, is this what defined it, do you think? Or was it something other than the defence?
Well, first of all, let's say it was a fantastic game, some great attacking play. But you're absolutely right, because Casemiro was missing for Real Madrid, because Alaba had an injury problem, they weren't good defensively. And you could say the same about Man City. Cancelo suspended. Walker, probably their quickest defender, well, certainly their quickest defender, not playing. Stones having to go off after about 30 minutes. And Fernandinho coming on at right back. He made the goal, but then made the big error of diving into Vinicius Jr. And then Laporte, I think, should be round on the cover. Instead, he ran straight back alongside Benzema. And that's why Vinicius Jr. ran straight through on goal and scored. So there was a lot of great attacking play, but you also have to question some of the defending.
Defensive errors defining this game, or brilliant football at the other end, Ali?
A combination of both. Some of the stuff that we saw from Karim Benzema, from Vinicius, some of the attacking play that we saw from Manchester. was artistic work at times. The triangles, the passing, the movement, the ability of players to get open, the rotation of spaces, the spatial awareness of certain players being able to turn and find the next pass. Matis was outstanding up until he got to the 18-yard box, and all of a sudden he forgot to how to finish a chance here and there. Foden had a couple of chances himself. There were chances left and right for Manchester City, and you have to say some of that had to do with their doing and their ability to be able to combine. But 10 minutes in, as Craig just alluded to it, Real Madrid, somebody had to wake them up and say, hey, gentlemen, it's a Champions League semifinal we're playing here. How passive and tentative was Real Madrid over the first few minutes of the game, and that you allowed Riyad Mahrez to cut to what? His left foot. What else is he going to do? What else does he want to do? That's exactly what he wants to do, to find that service onto Kevin De Bruyne. And let me get to the subject of Kevin De Bruyne. Second goal. Yes, it's a mistake by Alaba, and it gets a little fortunate Gabriel Jesus on the turn. But you give space to the best server of the ball in Europe, and that's Kevin De Bruyne, to go and cross the ball. If you don't get tied to Mahrez, you don't get tied to Kevin De Bruyne, if you're Real Madrid, you're showing again some of your vulnerabilities. But while I think of vulnerabilities for Real Madrid, it's impossible to talk about the vulnerabilities of Manchester City. Stewie just alluded to it. Yes, Fernandinho gets turned on his attacking half, right? He gets turned. So Vinicius Jr. still has to run 60 yards to get to goal. And Laporte is just backpedaling, unaware that Zinchenko is now covering Benzema, and he just allowed Vinicius to have a free run on goal. That is poor defending, but we saw it from both sides. We saw it more from Real Madrid. So if you're Manchester City, you think, we scored 4 goals at home in a Champions League semifinal, and this is still not dead, somehow.
Because it was a great start from Manchester City. Do you think that surprised Real Madrid?
No, they would have been expecting it, because that's what City do. They press and they pass it quickly. When they pass it quickly, they're almost unstoppable. But, you know, it was a classic case of all these little bad decisions defensively. If you think about the first goal cutting inside Mahrez, you think about the second goal, you got Carvajal up the field, Militao gets dragged out into the right back position, gets turned, then the ball comes in the box, Alaba makes a mistake, then the Laporte one. I mean, Guardiola must be bringing Laporte in tomorrow. Say, watch this video, and then when he's leaving the room, say, Emery, get back in here, watch it again. How the hell? I mean, you're sitting watching the TV thinking, what defender doesn't go to the ball in that scenario? How far do you have to let a player come in the box before you go to it? He doesn't even go to it. And then Fernandinho, it was an interesting substitution, because it was Fernandinho over Ake, who has played there, but he's a more, obviously, natural defender. Fernandinho more experienced, will get forward better, but he is a natural. He's a handful, Vinicius Jr. And what happened was, for the third goal, the Foden header, Fernandinho, in not a too dissimilar position, got in front of him and nicked it. Mm-hmm. And that got them a goal. And that suckered him into thinking he could do it again, when that was just really a bad decision not to stay goal side. So there's lots of little factors in the game defensively, which is why you just can't rule Real Madrid out. City's Achilles heel in this competition over recent years is making silly mistakes and letting teams off the hook at key times at the knockout stages. And they've done it again today. Not to say they're going to do it in Madrid, in the Bernabeu, in a week's time, but they've done it again today when they could have been taking a 2, maybe 3 goal lead to Spain.
Isn't that the sequence that you just described there, with Fernandinho and Vinicius Jr., isn't that a microcosm of the game? In that you think Manchester City, in the way that Fernandinho took that ball forward, served it over to Phil Foden, they scored the fourth goal, you think, well, okay, this is it. There's no way, no chance that Real Madrid is going to come back now. But then the same participants, the same protagonists, in the same sort of play, and there's a totally different outcome, in which now you see Vinicius Jr. going and scoring on the other side. Just when you thought, at every point in this game, when you thought that Manchester City was going to be far superior to Real Madrid, and they were going to be the better team, and they were going to score the goals, and they were going to have a lead, a big lead going into the second leg, Real Madrid was just there to capitalize on mistakes. And this is what they have been doing over the course of this competition. Against PSG, they did the same thing, and it's a group that if you allow to hang around, They're going to bite you in the end. Manchester City just allowed Real Madrid some life that they didn't need to.
And yeah, they had tightened it up, Manchester City, Nadim, defensively in these knockout stages of the Champions League before this. So how's Pep going to be feeling after this game with what he saw from his defenders?
I think he'll find some positives, but a lot of the, but for those goals, you know, they are avoidable, even for the penalty. Like, City had the ball, Phil Foden had the ball on the left-hand side, and he tried to play something fancy, and he gives away a free kick. But to encourage pressure when the game is at that particular point was a mistake. And then for Laporte himself, you know, he has flicked off his head, but the mistake is you've not made better contact, because if you do, it's not going to hit your arm. So for them, you know, they did play, they did sort of become the architects of their own downfall. But I suppose for Pep, he's going to look at it and understand that it's the mistakes that kind of allowed Real Madrid to get back into the game. And in some ways, you believe that when you go out onto the field next time, you'll be able to deal with some of those and maybe not make them again. And I think if that's to be the case, as Craig was alluding to, when City move the ball quickly, at times they're almost unplayable. And that Madrid midfield, they're really good on the front foot. But when you're finding people like Kevin De Bruyne behind you, you know, obviously Casemiro might be back for the second leg. But from what I'm hearing as well, I think Kyle Walker, Cancelo and so on are going to be available for next week anyway. So I think it's just for them, you know, they know their mistakes. They weren't outplayed by Real Madrid by any point, and they'll be disappointed that it's just 4-3. But then the big positive is they scored four goals. They have a lead, and they know that a win or a draw in Madrid gets them into the Champions League final, which at the end of the day is the main objective for this round.
We mentioned the absences, Stuart. Did Pep get the lineup right for his side, even though he didn't have those players available?
Yes, I think he did, because he played Zinchenko on the left-hand side, which is his favourite position, and he got forward to a certain degree. So it was a lopsided back four, with Stones playing as the right back. Ake is very much left-footed, so I couldn't see Ake playing at right back. And as Nedim just said, next week, Diaz will be a weak fitter, because he's only just played the one game against Watford. Walker should be back, and Cancelo will be back. So it's a much better looking back four, and I think Man City will be much better defensively with Rodriguez sitting in front of them.
Hang on, so let's look at it though. It's 4-3, so it's a goal advantage going into this game. Mm. But it's the Bernabeu for Real Madrid.
I think Real Madrid are going to have to score three. Mm. No, there's no away goals and all that, but I can see City scoring. I can see City scoring in Madrid.
So this is still an advantage going to the Bernabeu for the second leg with just the one goal on.
You mean you have no confidence in Militao and Alaba and Mendy?
No confidence in either of them. Defence is really, to be honest, and I know there'll be all these players back, which is great. But yeah, I mean it's a pretty good result in the face of it. If you just flick the TV on now and say 4-3, great game. Set to take the lead to Bernabeu. The three goals don't make much of a difference in terms of the away goals because that's not around anymore. But really and truly, the performance was actually better than that. But the result is not, and that's just a fact of the matter. So yeah, I mean I think if City make those mistakes again in Madrid, I think they'll go out because he's just up front. They're just clinical. They're ruthless. If they don't, and this is all the time I say this with City, it's about the basics. They're so good going forward. It's about the basics for them. If they get the basics right, like not diving in front, like going to pressure the ball when you should, when somebody's driving in the box. If you do the basics, the rest will take care of itself for City. If they don't, that's what's bit them on the backside in previous years. We'll find out which City turn up next week.
When they were in full control of this game early on, and they're winning 2-0, and there is a chance for Riyad Mahrez that takes it with the right foot, should have been 3-0, it is not. There was no life to Real Madrid. The life for Real Madrid came by Manchester City losing the ball in bad areas, by Ederson trying to play just a risky ball, an unnecessary ball, by taking a chance. And I know that this is the way that you play, and maybe this is the personality of the team, and so Ederson has the freedom to do these things. Okay, so be it. But maybe there are moments in which judgment should be a little bit better. You're in full control of the game. Why? Why give Real Madrid life? And that's the part that I think Manchester City ignored today. There were moments in which this game could have been and should have been killed off, whether by scoring another goal or defending better or putting some numbers behind the ball and not allowing 1v1 situation or isolation or transition. And yet, this is the way Manchester City plays, and this is the way they think of themselves. But maybe there are moments in which managing the game should be more of a priority. And it isn't, because we saw that they got in a back and forth with Real Madrid, and Real Madrid was more than comfortable in doing that.
And one thing we know, Stuart, is when Karim Benzema on the pitch, anything's possible for Real Madrid.
Well, they were 2-0 down, and a ball comes into the box, and he's not really favourite to get it on target. It's a great finish. He doesn't make the perfect contact, but he's in the right place. He arrives at the right time. He gets across the front of Zinchenko and just guides it into the corner. It was a brilliant finish and got them back into the game. And some of his closing down, and Ali just mentioned it, Ederson gave Real Madrid a chance on two or three occasions, and they were unlucky when Benzema won the ball off Diaz and Vinicius Junior was offside. So that was the key to Real Madrid getting back into the game, that brilliant finish from Benzema.
Nadim, you mentioned those players coming back next week. What do you think the chances are of getting to the final for City?
You know, I don't think you'll find many people that would be saying Real Madrid are clear favourites going to the second leg. You know, with that goal deficit that they have, and the fact that City, I think, can score goals, as Craig was alluding to there, I think City, I wouldn't call them comfortable favourites like those odds do. But you know that they can execute. You know, they made it to the final last year. They managed in other games to sort of not make too many mistakes. So the expectation is, you know, they're going to see this game back, and they're going to understand that they can't do certain things like that in that stadium. I think when we look at the last time they were in Madrid, they were, you know, they were solid enough. They ended up leaving and getting into the semi-final. So I guess the belief is that has to be the foundation. And then with that, if they can find some of their front players be clinical enough on the day, then I think it makes for a good day for them. Obviously, you fancy Real Madrid to score at home. This is Real Madrid that never give up. The Madrid that always seem to be in the game, no matter what the scoreline is. But City are a very, very good side. And I think they edge it for me. And I think they'll go into that game and possibly win the tie.
Who's going through, Craig?
Still City, I think, at the moment. Still City. But yeah, I mean, Real Madrid, you just can never rule them out. I mean, I'm such a big fan of Benzema, 34 years old, those stats and on that graphic are just incredible. But I think with the players coming back and the one goal lead, I'm just going to edge 60-40 City. Just.
Hello?
I came into this series thinking that Manchester City is a better team than Real Madrid. And having seen the game today, that opinion doesn't change. Manchester City is a better team than Real Madrid. But why allow this team to live? Why? There was no need to give this team any sort of life. And while we want to focus on Manchester City and the players that are maybe coming back from Manchester City, there are also players coming back for Real Madrid. Having said all that, I'm not going to go back on it. I still think Manchester City is a better team. They exposed today Real Madrid in many areas of the field. Somehow you got to keep an eye on Vinicius. Somehow you got to keep an eye, or two eyes really, on Benzema. I'm going to say Manchester City, but I have no confidence whatsoever in any of that.
Stuart, who are you going for?
It's going to go right to the wire. I think we could see extra time. They've got great mentality, Real Madrid. Man City got some great players, and they play some great attacking football. This is going right to the wire. It's going to be just as good next week. But Man City, just by a whisker.
Clean sweep for Manchester City.
Well, you know what that means.
Too money on Real Madrid then.
Well, Real Madrid could win La Liga's title this weekend, and maybe that could factor into how they'll be feeling going into the second leg of that tie. All they need to do is get a point this weekend against Espanyol. It's a game you'll be able to see on ESPN Plus, along with all these other La Liga games this weekend. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Liverpool Villarreal coming up, a second semi-final. And Jurgen Klopp will not be underestimating his opponent, who have knocked out both Juventus and Bayern along the way, something Yellow Submarine's Arno Danjuma claims was not by chance. Here he is speaking to Julien Laurent.
We didn't really have it easy, to be fair. I think our path wasn't that easy, which makes it even better, I think. Obviously, we were in quite a tough group stage. We went through, and then to beat out Juventus and Bayern Munich, I think you don't beat those teams by coincidence.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good sign for us, especially coming up to Liverpool now, who is another giant and who's one of the best clubs in the world. Makes it for us just more enjoyable, I guess. I think if you play Champions League and you want to compete against the best in the world, you want to compete against the best players in the world and the best clubs in the world, and who else than meeting Liverpool in the semi-finals.
Nadim's still with us. Do you think Villarreal Ale can continue to surprise against Liverpool here with what we've seen so far?
I think they're going to meet a team in Liverpool that is quite different to Bayern Munich, quite different to Juventus. Those teams allow Villarreal to get very comfortable behind the ball, to be very good defensively because of how slow their ball movement was and how predictable they became in the attack. I think Liverpool is a completely different team because their strength is how quickly they move the ball and how quickly is the movement of the ball from the players up top and the rotations of some of these players, how direct they can be. If Villarreal is allowed to settle behind the ball and sit back and organize themselves, then they'll be difficult. But Liverpool gets out in transition, gets enough speed in front of the ball, enough movement in front of the ball, that I think is going to be very difficult for Villarreal to close down those spaces.
They're dangerous, though.
Absolutely.
And they've got the players there.
I mean, they've been up and down. There's a reason where they are in La Liga, because they've just not been quite consistent enough. But I've seen them on many occasions just... they'll play out from the back, they'll take chances, and sometimes they'll press, but I'll be all at the back, you know, knocking on a bit now, can he handle the pace of Liverpool? But that was a big statement, putting Bayern Munich out. You know, they put Juventus out, that's more a name thing. Juventus are not a great team at the moment, but Bayern Munich are not, maybe not as strong as they were, but still a very good team. However, as Ali said, this is another step up. But they're a dangerous side. They've got a manager who's got great history in European competition in the last 10 years or so, in Unai Emery. So it would be a shock, I think, over two legs. But I think Liverpool should have enough, particularly this front three. It's probably going to be Diaz, Mane and Salah.
Yeah, well, take your pick with the front three.
Well, right? I think that is, but that would be my front three, and I think that's just going to be a bit too hot to handle.
Well, the one thing that we do know is that Jurgen Klopp is not underestimating the opponent, which is something that we have seen before when it's come to getting drawn against Villarreal.
Well, who?
Some of the higher ups at Bayern had
a bit of a giggle about it. Yeah.
Anyway, this is what Jurgen Klopp said. He says, "We've properly analysed Villarreal. I have proper respect for Unai Emery and them. I watched them properly, and wow, impressive. He is a detail-obsessed manager. Different ways to press and react to different results." If there are any areas that Liverpool need to be aware of, Nadim, where do you think there would be?
I think that's a good question, because for me, this matchup itself, as the guys have been alluding to, I think for as direct as Liverpool can be in the sort of tempo and that energy, you know, that can really force a team to be back. But I think with Liverpool, as is the case of other teams in a competition, like, they will offer you a few opportunities. And it's a case of, can you take those? But I think for Villarreal, it is about sort of trying to soak up that pressure and making sure that when you do sort of go out there, you time it right and you are clinical. But like I say, you know, the odds are like that for a reason, because Liverpool, you know, they're challenging for a Premier League title as Villarreal. Looks like they might not make the top four in La Liga this year. So it is a completely different situation. But yeah, Villarreal, they're a good side. You know, they didn't arrive in the semi-finals by accident, so they are capable of scoring. But I think for this tie here, it feels like they'd have to score at least 2-3 goals to really be in with a chance. Because for Liverpool, I just don't see them not scoring multiple goals potentially in both games. And I suppose the biggest positive of all, really, is the fact that they're playing at Anfield first. Because whatever the scoreline would be in the first game, if the second leg was going to be at Anfield, you know, historically you see that Liverpool are very, very good there. So I guess it's just a case of seeing what you can get from Anfield tomorrow, and then hopefully taking something back to your own fans and maybe getting a bit of momentum in that game. But like I say, I think they'll need to score multiple goals to be in with a chance.
I mean, it is one thing Jurgen Klopp saying saying we're not underestimating them. But, you know, you can't speak for all of the players there. You may look at that tie if you're a Liverpool player right now and think that it is more favourable. How important is it to not underestimate your opponent?
Absolutely, is first and foremost for Liverpool, in that you are able to get past that mental hurdle of looking at Villarreal and saying, we got this, this is done, game over, game set match, we're Liverpool, we're going to show up, we're going to win. Because that's pretty much the approach that Bayern Munich took, and, well, they're out. They're drinking their beers from winning the Bundesliga, but not from winning Champions League. The issue is, though, while Jurgen Klopp can say this in a press conference, it's undeniable that the other three teams that are involved in the semifinal would not have wanted to play who? Villarreal. This is a team that everybody wanted to play. You think Manchester City wouldn't rather play Villarreal than Real Madrid, or Real Madrid wouldn't want to play Villarreal instead of Manchester City? Of course. This is the weaker team of the four that are available. So in that sense, you think, well, Liverpool should not overlook Villarreal, right? Easier said than done. So the first few minutes for Liverpool are going to be really important. If they are really on the front foot, if they're really pressuring Villarreal, if you don't allow Villarreal to settle into the game, if you don't allow Dani Parejo to just knock the ball around, a guy that can barely move defensively, force him to move, force him to defend, and do the same thing with Albiol as well. Guys that have difficulties getting around the field, force them to defend in space, and that's when Liverpool will be successful.
Liverpool haven't had as much rest, though, which is worth mentioning. Villarreal have been able to put their feet up at the weekend. Liverpool certainly didn't.
No, well, in some sense,
well,
they did. They had 78% possession against Everton. I think Alan had two touches of the ball for Everton, or he had two successful passes, and they were from set pieces. So it wasn't the most taxing game. It was a frustrating game for them. It took them a while and a couple of substitutes later to break Everton down. So it wasn't a sparkling performance from Liverpool. But yeah, I think there's no issues of tiredness here. Game's at home, there'll be a full house. He was able to leave Diaz on the bench, who'd come on, who I think will play because he's in great form. Thiago's in great form. I don't think there's any injury issues. So I don't, they can't afford to make any mistakes at the back with the likes of Gerard Moreno around and one or two other players. They've got a lot of pace about them. Villarreal, if they want, they can bring Chukwueze off the bench if he doesn't play, which I don't think he will. Very quick, very direct. But it's all about what Liverpool do. And if that front three operates in the manner in which they have been recently, it could be a difficult night for Villarreal. But what an amazing story. I mean, that town, is it 50,000?
Well, they were actually playing the Champions League music at a nearby school today all day during break times.
It's unbelievable. Like just outside Valencia, and he had a small budget for bringing players in and paying players. So what an amazing story for them. But it would be a huge... The pressure's all on Liverpool. Mm-hmm. The pressure is all on Jurgen Klopp. Whatever happens to Villarreal, it's been fantastic. I mean, don't get me wrong, they'll want to go all the way to the final. And by the way, Real Madrid and City will want Villarreal to go all the way to the final and cause an upset. But I don't think it will happen.
Well, as it stands, City and Liverpool are favourites to get to the final. They are on a collision course to get there, but if you want to see them in a final where they will definitely not be meeting, it's Liverpool against Chelsea.
Just wangle your way around that one.
What?
Because it's Liverpool and City. And, oh, no.
We thought it could. No, we do.
We know where you were going.
Because it was a series. Liverpool against Chelsea, coming up on Saturday, May 14th on ESPN+.
OK, they'll edit this. Don't worry, they'll edit this.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Continuing the chat about the immediate future at Manchester United, we remind you of Ralf Rangnick's comments after the defeat to Liverpool. He said, "I think apart from the goalkeeping, we need to make sure that we improve the squad in all areas. There will be a rebuild here, 6, 7, maybe 10 new players.
Okay.
will come. Well, the latest word from Manchester football correspondent Rob Dawson at ESPN is that Erik ten Hag has been told that the club wants an evolution, not a revolution.
Oh.
And it won't be templates.
An evolution of what? An evolution of the garbage that they've been producing?
Well, it's more
so that's
likely,
better garbage.
Yeah. Sources say it's more
less
likely
garbage.
To be three players and not ten. So that doesn't sound so good for ten Hag.
I think it's always difficult to change, you know, 10 players at once. There's no doubt they need somewhere close to that when you look at the performances of a lot of the players out with the goalkeeper, who we've all talked about has resurrected his career, basically. He's been absolutely
He's fantastic. Had enough repetition.
Yeah, he's had plenty of practice this season. But yeah, that's not what Ten Hag will want to hear. It's probably not what he was told at interview at the process. And that's a worry for Man United fans, that they think that this ownership, this backroom structure, staff, whatever you want to call them, sporting directors, all these people, that's the line they're trying to throw out there, that it's only going to be two or three players, because Cavani's old, Ronaldo's not getting any younger either, although he scored a lot of goals. So there's a couple of positions. I mean, it's a worry, because they need a complete overhaul.
Three and not ten, according to this report, Nadim. If you're a United fan, are you worried about these type of reports?
I think, to be honest, this takes me back to when Ranić was first appointed, and he said he's going to be doing this job till the end of the summer, and then he's going to be the consultant. But then I remember sort of asking the question, well, what happens if they don't finish in the top four? Are they still going to consult him? And the answer is, no, they're not. You know, he thought he knew what the situation was going to be, and yet still the message is, well, maybe it's two or three. And the thing that sort of troubles me the most, I would say, is that people who are joining Manchester United, like, how can they be surprised? Like, this is the club, this is what it is. And when you're doing the interviews, are you not asking these questions, like, what the future looks like? So are United just basically lying to people as they're coming in? Or is it just a case of, you know, we're misreading this from the outside? Because for United, you look at them, like the position they're in club-wise, it's a mess. You know, the structure feels a mess. Some of the players and the way they're playing at this moment, really bad. But like, what's new? You know, if someone wants to know what's going on at Man United, just tune into the show every day. We talk about it pretty much every single day. It's such a mess. So for Ten Hag, you know, like, he's just got to, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. If he's surprised before he's even had a day of work, like, what situation is the club really in? Let's be honest about it.
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it? Mm. Don't you, as a manager, when you're coming into a club like this, want some assurances beforehand, before you're hearing this type of chat?
Maybe so, but if you're Erik ten Hag, this is a tremendous opportunity. This is a great opportunity. This is a better job than the one you had before. Yes, Manchester United, even where they are right now, is an upgrade to Ajax, right? Because it is a bigger job, and you get blinded by the lights of Manchester United. And then, and here's the part that a lot of people don't think about. There's a certain arrogance that comes to being a manager at this level, or a consultant at this level. You think you coming in, you're gonna change it. You're gonna be the guy that has the right ideas and has the right mindset and has the mentality and has the way to communicate to players, and you're gonna be the guy who's gonna get the best out of this group, and then you're gonna add your pieces and we're gonna be great. We're gonna be great. There's much more to fix at Manchester United than three players, seven players, on 10 players. Until you fix what's going on in the front office and decision makers and what they call the club culture, all of these other things may help, may paper over the cracks, but they're not going to resolve the issue.
They brought Ralph Rangnick in to listen to him. They didn't bring Ralph Rangnick in as the greatest coach that was walking the planet at the time. They brought him in because apparently, and there's people who know a lot more about it than me, particularly in Germany, he's very good at analysing the structure of a football club and how decisions should be made and how it improves. I'll give it to you, he's improved nothing on the coaching side of things. But if he's been brought in to tell them about structures and players and what needs to change, and if he's telling them they've got 6 to 10 wasters that they need to get out, and they're saying, well, we're not listening to you. That
kind of sums them up. That's what he was brought in to do. I mean, it's mind-boggling. This takes me back to the interview that Mark Ogden and some other journalists had with Ed Woodward, the former chief executive, who sat there and apparently said, no, I don't agree that we've wasted money and made bad signings. I mean, these people are just kidding themselves on. This is what Ranić was brought in to do. He wasn't brought in as Klopp and Guardiola. He was brought in as a guy that looks behind the scenes and has built football clubs and helped build smaller clubs with structures. That's what United needed. But it seems that he's come in and they've gone, well, your results are not very good, so we're not listening to you and we're just going to do our own thing. What a gigantic waste of time.
So we're going to consult with the consultant, but we're not going to listen to the consultant.
Exactly. Because results are not right, we're not going to listen to the consultant who's telling us there's problems behind the scenes and the football decisions will not be bettered until better decisions have been made. But we're just going to go down our own road because that's the road we've been going down since 2013 when Sir Alex Ferguson left. How has that worked out? I mean, I'm sure they'll sign better players and I'm sure Erik ten Hag will be given some leeway. But there are too many people there, it seems to me, behind the scenes, trying to meddle in their own little area. You know what I mean? Making sure they're protecting that.
So is that the problem? Is it not going to change?
I don't know if it's going to change. I thought the whole point of Ranić was to give them a blueprint of bringing, and I've heard a couple of other names mentioned, a guy Paul Mitchell from Monaco, who's a recruitment guy. Don't know him, whatever, but I thought this was the whole process about trying to change the way they've been doing it, because the way they've been doing it means they're lagging behind, and that can't continue with the money that they keep spending. They've spent a lot of money. It's not like they haven't spent. The Glazers have given them money, but they're chasing bad money with bad money. They need some better clarity, and this just makes you think it's going to be the same old, same old.
In terms of simple math, right? So now Manchester United is saying, no, three players. Well, just the players leaving for free, it's four. Four is more than three, right? And then the ones that are up for sale that you know you don't want to have. How many more games do you need to watch Phil Jones play to say, no, please, no more, right? There are a bunch of guys there that you need to get rid of. So just on that alone, you know that what you need is certainly more, and it's significantly more than three players in order to change the personnel on the field. Change the stuff in the front office, change the stuff on the personnel on the field, and then you change the manager, change the whole thing. But obviously what they're doing right now is not working in the immediate future, and it's not going to work in the long-term future unless there's a structure that they're able and willing to follow. I don't think that exists right now.
So is it not a change in the dugout that is needed, Nathan, but a change upstairs?
I think the change upstairs has to happen if the club wants to be successful for a long period of time. And I think there are other people in other positions which need to be dealt with as well. But, you know, as far as bringing a new manager on the field, I think there needs to be somebody on the sideline who appears like the players respect, because I think the way that they've played the second half of the season, like, I hold my hands up, like, Craig called people out for this at the start of the season. I thought United finishing second last year was really impressive, and the three players they brought in, I thought it meant more success to come. I was very, 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 very wrong. And then when Ranić came in and we were talking about who's going to finish top four, I looked at the players they had and I heard Ranić was really good. So I said they're going to finish top four. So it just goes to show that something is off there. And, you know, there's a lot of unhappiness among some of the players for the style of play, the fact that some of them aren't playing, the fact that they're losing games probably more than they've probably ever done in their entire careers, and they're not able to handle that. So I think a new coach on the sideline, if he can present something to them which they can believe in, then I think performances will be better. I don't think they'll be challenging, say, for the top two, top three potentially, but they'll be better, and that's a starting point. And I think from when they're better then, the changes behind the scenes in the front office, as Ali was alluding to, maybe then it can be building for success instead of just building to just be a lot better than the sort of mess that they're in at this moment in time, where come the end of the season, for all we know, they could be down in seventh position with players like Varane, Sancho and Ronaldo in the squad. And as we all know, that is completely unacceptable.
But at least the Instagram quotes will be nice. An evolution, not a revolution.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Thankfully, we're not on it.
More like a devolution at this point.
More chat, more football chat on the podcast version of our show. It's available daily. Make sure to download it wherever you get your podcasts. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
A charity game between Borussia Dortmund and Dynamo Kiev took place Tuesday in Germany, with all proceeds going to Ukraine. This game gave the Ukrainian players time to get ready for those big, crucial World Cup qualifiers coming up in the summer. €400,000 was raised.
We want to help the people from Ukraine, and I think the score was not important, the football was not important. We just wanted to send a message to the world. We are all here just for peace. And that's what we said, and we will stay behind them, and we are just for peace.
And of course, that game's against Scotland, Ukraine in the summer, Craig.
Yeah, and I think they're trying, I know the Scottish FA are trying their utmost to try and help out the Ukrainians with training facilities and make sure they can be up for the game, which is going to have to be played. And hopefully that'll be a good game, and there'll be a lot of support for the Ukrainians.
Yeah, there absolutely will be. Thanks so much for being with us on the show. Stick around, Extra Time up next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Ali and Craig in the studio and Nadim along with us too. A bit of a cheeky one to start off with from Ellis Redding. Ali says, well, that was boring. I have to say, I agree with Perez. Having just watched Man City versus Real Madrid, the game is a bit dull. What should we do to make it more exciting and have more goals? Ideas, please. Yes, I am kidding.
So what is the question?
I think it's a bit cheeky saying, is there even such a need for something like a Super League when this is what the Champions League can offer up?
Well, I'm assuming that Florentino Perez would want more of Manchester City and Real Madrid playing against each other. That is indeed the concept of the Super League. Now, of course, I'm not for it, but that is what Florentino Perez would say. That these are the games because these are high-quality teams playing at a high level with a lot to play for. So I'm thinking that Florentino Perez would actually say, yeah, this is evidence as to why we need to have a Super League.
Yeah, that kind of defeats the purpose, that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because they're still pushing for it, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're one of the teams, allegedly.
Three of them left, still gone.
Real.
Barcelona and Juventus. Yeah.
So that
that'd be a good three-team league.
I mean, I actually reading it back, I can't tell if Ellis is agreeing with Perez really or being sarcastic now. But anyway,
well,
let us know, Ellis.
I think Ellis is arguing against himself at this point.
Right, maybe.
Send the question and let us know Friday.
Nadim, I'm off Friday, that's right. How badly is Pep going to overthink the second leg?
Oh my goodness gracious me. This is so hostile. Like he's done exceptionally well in terms of his team selections for pretty much the whole season. I think, you know, Rodri's playing really well, so he's going to be playing the six. Or like, you know, Fernandinho's going to be playing the six. You know what the attacking midfielder is going to be. Kevin De Bruyne is not going to be playing left back. He's going to be playing an advanced role. And I think one thing he's done well as well is the fact that he's played so many little combinations and different setups that whoever goes out there, it kind of makes sense. And I think according to the way this game went today, he could overthink about some of the mistakes the City have made. But I think for the players who've made them, I think they'll look at the goals and understand they need to do better. But the fact is, you know, Pep is Pep, and I wouldn't be surprised if he put out a very similar team on the next week. But they just had a more sort of like drive and understanding of what's required to try and win in that stadium. So I'm confident he will not overthink it.
Nadim, with everything you've just said, that he hasn't overthought things so far, mm-hmm. does that not suggest that he is due a good overthink?
Okay, what's he going to do? Tell me what you think he's going to do that's going to be overthought, which we've not seen already this season.
I'm not going to say that he's one of the greatest managers in football.
Mormford Furness?
This goes back to, I think,
He'll be fine.
This goes back to playing Gundogan mm-hmm. in the Champions League final in that day. This, not the only thing, but I think this is the crux of it. And people just haven't forgotten, have they?
No.
At least we can't be ever accused of that, overthinking on this show.
Or of anyone letting you forget anything you've said.
No.
They did say, though, Pep was a little bit short in the press conference.
Oh. What do you mean short?
No,
I don't. No, Dan Thomas,
So, first of all, he was annoyed. But second of all, he knows what to expect from the Madrid press. Mm-hmm. And there was very short answers after that game tonight.
Okay.
So, we'll see if he's going to start overthinking things.
Uh-huh.
All right. Concise. That's a nice way. All right, concise. You should be a PR guy. It wasn't short. It was concise.
To the point.
Right. Craig, have you ever seen a player miss two penalties the previous game and dare to attempt a Panenka on his next one in a big occasion like the semi-final of the Champions League while losing? Maybe Bruno and Jorginho can take some notes from Benzema.
We talked about it the other day about a missing against
Osasuna.
Osasuna.
Two against Osasuna,
For some reason, I was going to say Rayo Vallecano. That was Barcelona.
Right. I'm here for you, buddy.
That was Barcelona at the weekend. It sums that man up, doesn't it? Mm. Really. Missing two not great penalties in that game. Not that they meant a lot, but then has to step up at a time of need for Real Madrid. And we wondered, would he? And you got your answer. So, yeah, not surprised.
He is the definition of ice in the veins, Benzema, isn't he? There's not a lot in those big moments that have that ice in the veins like him. Is he going to win the Ballon d'Or this year?
Well, he should. The way I look at it, he should.
But April? Not even in May yet.
And I had to get it in. Well, there's been a lot of talk about it.
What?
After tonight's performance from Benzema, there's been a lot of talk.
Well, there's nobody in the world playing the position better than Karim Benzema. He is giving a clinic how to play the striker position. And it's not just the goals. It's a lot of stuff that he does outside of the goals. And then you add the productivity, and it's just special. And he has been special for a while. This is not just the last few games in Champions League, he has been special the whole year.
The Ballon d'Or's a calendar year, isn't it?
No,
I should know that. It is, yeah?
Yes.
Nonsense. What, seasons are not a calendar year, really?
Well, it's tough, isn't it? Because then you could have a really bad start to a season and people start to forget you and have had a really great season.
Yeah, but it's a season. Oh. At least it's a season. A calendar year is not a season.
No, no.
And it's the exactly. Ballon d'Or is dished out, I believe, from all the teams playing in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think somebody from, I don't know, do they?
No. Not usually, no.
You don't look convinced.
No, no.
Yeah, I'm not really convinced.
I mean, I've posted it twice.
Have you?
Yes.
Sorry. You're the new Frank LaBeouf. Why don't you come in with a World Cup on your shoulder?
It only took me 2 years to mention it.
Did I tell you? I posted the Ballon d'Or twice.
So let's get to the bottom of it. This is why you brought up the conversation about the Ballon d'Or. It wasn't in the questions. Now you worked it in. Well, you know, I've hosted it twice.
Well,
so, you know.
Well, I think Karim Benzema should win the Ballon d'Or, the one that I've hosted twice in the past, and I'm hoping to host it again. Hello, anybody out there?
No, I think that ship sailed. I think that ship sailed, although it was messy on the two times that I hosted it.
Oh, I see.
His third and his fourth.
And how was your Spanish?
Perfecto.
Better than Dan Thomas?
Well, okay, but the bar is very low.
Yeah, yeah. But at the end of the end.
Anyway,
all right.
Sorry. What's the biggest event you've ever hosted?
Oh, did I not tell you? Yeah. The Ballon d'Or?
Oh!
Not once, but twice.
So how do you host the Ballon d'Or and end up here? What did you do wrong?
That was the peak.
Off the cliff.
Get
quick.
To work with us. Anyway, come on, questions.
Alongside a gentleman you know very well.
Oh.
Ruud Gullit.
A friend.
And he was hosting.
He was hosting alongside me.
I tell you what.
Close friend.
You shouldn't have mentioned that. He was hosting.
He continues to host a lot of the big awards now.
He hosts.
Mm-hmm.
He hosts. Rind.
My great friend, Drew Tullett.
My great friend.
All right, this next one's for you, Ali. Is Ancelotti bound to the Kroos, Casemiro, Modric midfield the same way Poch is with Neymar and the other stars? Kroos has been subpar. Should Valverde, Camavinga start next week? Valverde slash Camavinga.
Right. All right. First of all, today was not Casemiro, Kroos and Modric. So, as it pertains to today, because of Casemiro's injury, he had to go with Valverde. Had Casemiro been available, I can tell you with 100% certainty that it would have been Casemiro, Kroos and Modric, who at their best can still perform at an elite level. Now, their best is not always out there, and they haven't been all that consistent. But if they're able to bring it together when it matters, Real Madrid will have an opportunity to turn this around. But they have to be at their best. I don't think it's time yet to have Camavinga and Valverde running the midfield for Real Madrid when you have Modric, Casemiro, and Kroos.
Okay. Nadim.
I've hosted the Ballon d'Or twice.
With Ruud.
With somebody.
Highlight of my career.
Was it?
Man.
Highlights, plural, of my career. Nadim, who would you rather have on your team right now based on the way they are playing? Benzema or Lewandowski?
My team, well, if I'm talking about City, I'd go for Benzema. Like, it's just incredible, the technique, the movement, the understanding, the finishing. Like, even that first goal today made it look so easy. And then the penalty, to have the sort of like confidence to do that in such a big moment when your team really, really needs a goal. It's class, it's incredible, you know, and the team is really, really relying on him. So I'd go there, and obviously Lewandowski is incredible, but I just like how involved Benzema is the whole time. And he's somebody who you just can't take your eyes off for a single second. So I'd go for him, definitely.
Benzema or Lewandowski for you, Craig?
Big Benz.
Mm-hmm. Big bad Benz. All right, Ale, how much do you think Vinny has improved and the reason why he's a different player this season?
Finishing. Final product. Much better than he was at any point in his career. Consistency of performance as well. Now, he's had a little dip over the last couple of months, but today he reacted very well to the fact that he did not come to the ball. Fernandinho wins the ball. He ends up crossing it to Foden. Foden scores. Next play, once Fernandinho tried to step again, he was able to put it through the legs. And then the real difference between Vinicius now, as Vinicius from the past, from years past, is he would make that same run. He would get in behind. He would get in front of the goalkeeper, and that would not be a goal. Today was a goal, and it has been for the most part this season.
Today's game.
He's a future Ballon d'Or winner, you know.
Did I tell you about that time? All right.
But I think it also helps that he's working under Ancelotti. Mm. He's very good, I think, at just nurturing players, big egos, big stars, and youngsters, and not killing them. Mm. You know what I mean? Not hanging them out to dry when they have a bad game, and supporting them. And I think, amongst all the other stuff, it looks like that's taken a little bit of pressure off him, that he knows he's got a manager that's not going to kill him if he has a couple of bad games.
Today's game was so fun for neutrals to watch. Did y'all ever play in a game where afterwards everyone was talking about how both teams played great? Craig.
Are we talking about both teams played great?
No. You've never been in one where it was just absolutely brilliant from... Obviously, there was the defensive issues today, but where you came off and you were like, wow, this was brilliant. Fair play to you lot as well.
Oh, I can't remember.
No?
Oh. We have this discussion every time on Extra Time.
All right, you ever think about it?
No, I'm not going to.
All right.
It's too taxing.
Too taxing. Nader, what about you?
I think.
Not really, because like if one of those games is high scoring, it means I've probably had a nightmare. So I try to sort of remove those ones from my brain. I don't know. No, I can't really think of many, to be honest. I can always think of it when like it's been a brilliant game for my team, and I remember the nightmares where it's been a brilliant game for the other team, but very rarely do you see both in a game that's sort of that open anyway, I would say.
Ale?
And this is talked about still in MLS for the wrong reasons, and I was on the wrong side. With the LA Galaxy playing against the San Jose Earthquakes, we were up to nothing from the first leg. We're up 2-0 in the second leg and lost 5-4.
Clearly, I've turned the page on it. Obviously, I've let it go. This would have been about just about 20 years ago, and it still is the biggest comeback in MLS playoff history, and I was a participant for the wrong team.
Yeah, thanks for reminding Ali about that.
Yeah, that's good. Awesome. Feel good about it.
You not see the tunnel? I played in a 4-4 once.
You played in a 4-4? Yeah. Can you remember who it was?
Yeah, Bradford. Premier League.
Right.
Derby.
Right.
What a good game.
No.
3-3 Arsenal.
With
Chelsea.
Chelsea.
Highbury, the old stadium. I think Dennis Wise scored late on to make it 3-3. That was a topsy-turvy. I can't remember many. I can't remember. I'm not good with memory like that.
That's
you know, at Bramall Lane, Sheffield United, I never thought I'd been there.
And you had.
I played there.
You know what he's going to do? He's going to go home tonight and go, that game.
I'm not.
I don't think so, no. No, I don't.
Anyway, that'll do. It is time to go.
I'm not. I'm thinking and, about Ballon d'Or.
Well, maybe tomorrow we can talk more about Karim Benzema.
What do you have to do to host it?
I'll have you know, by the way, in that San Jose Earthquake LA Galaxy playoff series, away goals did not count the way that they do now. So if they had, we would have advanced. But I've let it go. Clearly, I've let it go.
You've
I've turned the page.
I mean, imagine if away goals counted in today's clash in the Champions League at ESPN FC.
Yeah, they did
daily.
Six.
Make sure to join us 7 days a week.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.